give way. Say to those with fearful hearts, be strong, do not fear, your God will come. He will come with vengeance, with divine retribution. He will come to save you. Then will the eyes of the blind be opened and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then will the lame leap like a deer and the mute tongues shout for joy. Water will gush forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. The burning sand will become a pool, the thirsty ground bubbling springs. In the haunts where jackals once lay, grass and reeds and papyrus will grow. And a highway will be there. It will be called the Way of Holiness. It will be for those who walk on that way. The unclean will not journey on it. Wicked fools will not go about on it. No lion will be there, nor any ravenous beast. They will not be found there, but only the redeemed will walk there. And those the Lord has rescued will return. They will enter Zion with singing. Everlasting joy will crown their head. Gladness and joy will overtake them. And sorrow and sighing will flee away. Kerry is going to come up to read our main passage for today now. So keep your Bibles open.
The reading starts Mark chapter 7, verse 31, which is on page 1011. Then Jesus left the vicinity of Tyre and went through Sidon, down to the Sea of Galilee and into the region of the Decapolis. There some people brought to him a man who was deaf and could hardly talk, and they begged Jesus to place his hand on him. After he took him aside, away from the crowd, Jesus put his fingers into the man's ears. Then he spat and touched the man's tongue. He looked up to heaven and with a deep sigh said to him, Ephatha, which means be opened. At this, the man's ears were opened, his tongue was loosed, and he began to speak plainly. Jesus commanded them not to tell anyone, but the more he did so, the more they kept talking about it. People were overwhelmed with amazement. He has done everything well, they said. He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak. During those days, another large crowd gathered. Since they had nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples to him and said, I have compassion for these people. They have already been with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. If I send them home hungry, they will collapse on the way because some of them have come a long distance. His disciples answered, But where in this remote place can anyone get enough bread to feed them? How many loaves do you have? Jesus asked. Seven, they replied. He told the crowd to sit down on the ground. When he had taken the 7 loaves and given thanks, he broke them and gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people, and they did so. They had a few small fish as well. He gave thanks for them also and told the disciples to distribute them. The people ate and were satisfied. Afterwards, the disciples picked up 7 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. About 4,000 were present, and after he had sent them away, he got into the boat with his disciples and went to the region of Dalmanutha. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Well, if you're just joining us today, you find us partway through a series in this bit of Mark's gospel. Maybe that's a gospel that you're familiar with yourself as well. It's often one that we spend time in as Christians. And yet we've been finding week after week that we're discovering new gems there as we go through. A reminder also of what you would have heard yesterday if you watched that service. Here is wisdom. Here is the royal law. These are the lively oracles of God. Not just some familiar stories about Jesus, but the lively oracles of God. And so James has prayed for us. So let's jump in. And actually, our theme today is highly topical. Our theme is kings and the kind of parties they throw and the sort of people they invite along. Cast your minds back, if you were here, a couple of weeks, and because we've heard about a couple of parties that kings throw in Mark's Gospel. So a couple of weeks ago, we heard about King Herod's party. The venue was his palace. The guest list was exclusive, and the nobles and the military commanders and the leading men of the area. I imagine the wine and the food was of fine quality. There was entertainment, there was dancing. And yet, if you know the story, the party left a real sour taste in the mouth because, well, in this horrible display of power, Herod went and executed John the Baptist and brought out his head on a platter. See, for all the trappings, that king's character made that party a very uncomfortable place to be. For all the hype, actually the sort of parties that the world throws, often they are not as attractive as they seem. But then there's another party in Mark's Gospel. The next thing we were told about, actually. This time hosted by King Jesus, the shepherd of his people. This time the setting was less luxurious. It was out in a desolate place. There was a much bigger guest list, 5,000 people from all over Judea. And the king there who threw this party, well, he showed great compassion to everyone. He recognized their needs and he provided for them in a most wonderful, miraculous way. They all ate their fill. And we're told back in chapter 6, the party ended with everyone leaving satisfied. No nasty taste left. A far better experience because it's a party thrown by a far better king. And yet, fast forward to today's passage, and we discover that actually King Jesus is even more generous and even more welcoming than we realized at the party with the 5,000. Because here we hear about two further events. And the first of them is deeply personal. We get this healing of one deaf man away from the crowds. And then the second is big and public and has this huge sense of deja vu to it, doesn't it? A near identical party thrown by King Jesus with this time a crowd of 4,000 people there. And these two events, I hope we're going to see this afternoon, they help us see just how far wide King Jesus is flinging open the gates to his wonderful kingdom. And so if you're here today and you have any sense of being an outsider, of not fitting in, for whatever reason, if you've got any sense of being undeserving or lacking in privilege, this is for you. Because these events, this personal interaction and then this big party, they both feature outsiders. They feature Gentiles. They feature people who, in the words of the Apostle Paul elsewhere in the New Testament, were separate from Christ, were excluded from citizenship in Israel, were foreigners to the covenants of promise, were without hope and without God in the world. That's Gentiles, outsiders. And yet here is Jesus deliberately acting in a way that shows that is all going to change. That his kingdom truly is for anyone who will recognize him as king, will pay homage to him as king. And one of the ways in this passage we are put onto this focus on Gentiles and outsiders, well, is by Jesus' route planning, his journey planning. So Jesus, we left him last time in Tyre. And he's already in Tyre. He had that hugely significant conversation with a lady who wasn't a Jew. And then, well, Tyre is just north of the traditional boundaries of Israel. And we're told here that Jesus wants to head back down to the Sea of Galilee, where he's been spending a lot of time. And so the obvious route for Jesus is to go back direct through Galilee, back through the his ministry heartland, the place where he spent so much time. And if you put it into Google Maps, that would be the route it suggested. You're in Tyre, you want to get to Galilee, go straight through where you've been before. But verse 31, we're told Jesus left the vicinity of Tyre and went through Sidon. Now, Sidon is in the opposite direction. It's north. The route Jesus decides to take to get to Lake Galilee, it wouldn't even be one of those alternatives that Google suggests to you that take, you know, 10 minutes longer. The sat-nav would be shouting him, do a U-turn, this is the wrong way. You see, this is a deliberate decision by Jesus to stay in Gentile territory the whole way, to skirt around Israel. He goes on this big circuitous route. And in fact, even when he gets to the Lake of Galilee, well, he heads for the region of the Decapolis, which is on the far eastern shore, a place that is populated mainly by Gentiles. And so do you see, even Jesus' travel decisions here, they show us this period in his ministry is all about stepping out and meeting those people who previously he's not met with and previously have been excluded. He's all about throwing wide open the doors to his kingdom. So first up, somewhere along that long, circuitous route, we get this deeply personal meeting with one deaf and mute man. I love how caring Jesus is here. You know, on the surface, this is just a wonderfully kind healing, isn't it? He recognises that he has before him a man who has been probably looked at and talked about and maybe laughed at his whole life. The centre of attention for the wrong reasons. And so what does Jesus do? He takes him away from the crowds. He takes him away from the prying eyes. And then he takes the time to communicate to this man in a way that he is going to be able to understand what exactly Jesus is about to do for him. You notice that? It all just gets slowed down. He gently puts his fingers in the man's ear to say, this is what I'm going to do. And then he touches his tongue. And then he looks up to heaven in a way that this man can see what he does. And then he mouths just a simple phrase, Ephphatha, be opened. And the man is completely healed. He can hear. He can speak for the very first time in his life. So on the surface level, this is just another wonderfully kind healing of a man who is an outsider, both physically and spiritually. And yet also, on top of that, in addition to that, I think there are at least two elements that suggest that Jesus is also, through this encounter with this one man, he is also signalling something that has much wider implications about his mission and what he's about and who he's come for. So first of all, ears. What has been the significance of ears in Mark's gospel? Well, a few chapters back, when Jesus was speaking about his kingdom, he was talking about how it is you get into his kingdom, there was this phrase he kept on repeating. Whoever's got ears, let them hear. Whoever's got ears to hear, let them hear. Jesus kept repeating that. It was the point of the parable of the sower back in chapter 4. He said, look, you need to listen. You need to keep on listening to me. You need to accept what you hear from me. That is the way to enter my kingdom. And yet here is a man who has got ears, but cannot hear. And so what does Jesus do? Well, he does exactly what this man needs in order to be able to hear. And I think through that, Jesus is signaling, look, I am going to come and I'm going to remove all the barriers that stop outsiders being able to be part of my kingdom. My message is for everyone. Everyone is going to get to hear my message, have the opportunity to respond. Everyone is invited to come in, accept, and bear fruit. So I think that's the first kind of clue that this is teaching us something bigger than just one kind healing of one man. And then also there is the people's reaction at the end of chapter 7. And they understandably express excitement about what they've just seen happen in front of their eyes. But their words have got far more significance than they realise, because verse 37, they say, he has done everything well. He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak. On these Gentiles' lips, I presume unknowingly, the words of Isaiah 35, that the first reading that we had that James read for us, words that describe God's great kingdom restoration, that describe not just physical healing but spiritual healing, that talked about eyes being opened and ears unstopped and the lame leaping and the mute shouting for joy. And a passage that ends with this promise of a great party. I'll just read again the end of chapter 35 of Isaiah. Those the Lord has rescued will return. They'll enter Zion with singing. Everlasting joy will crown their heads. Gladness and joy will overtake them, and sorrow and sighing will flee away. Do you see what Jesus is doing as he goes into Gentile territory and he heals this one deaf and mute man? He's showing us not just that his compassion trickles down to outsiders, but that his invite to the party to end all parties is on offer to them as well. That his great salvation mission, this second Exodus rescue, it is for them too. Jesus is saying, look, by my death on the cross, the gates to my amazing kingdom are going to be thrown open to absolutely anyone who comes to me. And just in case we don't know Isaiah 35 well enough to spot that that's what's on the lips of these people here, Jesus then throws another party. A party that he throws the wrong side of the lake, outside the official borders of Israel, in Gentile territory, to drive the point home. The start of chapter 8, the feeding of the 4,000. It's so similar, isn't it, to what happened before, the feeding of the 5,000. In fact, some Bible scholars, they suggest here that Mark must have got himself in a muddle. You know, he heard two slightly different accounts of the same event, and he accidentally recorded it twice. And that is proof that just because someone is a Bible scholar, that doesn't mean they don't sometimes say stupid things. They are the ones who've completely missed the point. Now, Jesus deliberately hosts another party, another miraculous feeding, out in another remote place, but this time a Gentile remote place, in order to make this same huge point. You know, as we watch the crumbs of just 7 loaves become another feast, as we hear about more overflowing baskets of leftovers, as we hear that these people too ate and were satisfied, well, so we're helped to grasp just the scope and the scale of what Jesus is offering to all outsiders. He is offering inclusion on exactly the same basis, with the same overflowing blessings as even the most privileged insider. I'm guessing tonight, I know one or two here are going to the concert tonight. I'm guessing tonight there are going to be some special VIP areas. No need to queue. You know, the very best view, lavish refreshments on hand. Not everyone there tonight had to chance their arm in the ballot, did they? But it's not like that in Jesus' kingdom. No special areas. Everyone who turns and follows the king gets the full package, VIP. And so again, if you feel like an outsider, if you question your place in the church for whatever reason, Jesus wants you to know today that your simple faith in him is enough. Whoever you are, wherever you come from, whatever your story. Because the doors to his kingdom have been flung wide open. And if I might say so, also well done, if that is you, for being more honest than probably most of us. Because I think for lots of us, the issue is not so much that we feel undeserving, but that we feel entitled. And so perhaps too, this section of the gospel is here to helpfully humble us. You know, 2,000 years on, we don't have much of the same sense of this kind of Jew and Gentile divide, do we? Talk of food laws and ethnic barriers and exclusion from God's promises is so far out of our experience. I mean, adding to that, we're Brits, aren't we, lots of us? You know, we took the gospel out to the Commonwealth. We're the privileged ones, we think. Surely we're the ones who naturally fit in Jesus' kingdom. Of course, we get an invite to his party. We read about all of these kingdom blessings and we assume they were always for us. Of course, we'd have been there at the feeding of the 5,000. Of course, we'd have been sat on the green grass, marveling at the miracle, feasting on the bread and the fish, leaving satisfied. But we're wrong, aren't we? With one or two exceptions, perhaps, we would not have been there because we're not Jewish. We're naturally outsiders. As Jesus set himself up as this long-promised Messiah of God's people, bringing this great rescue from sin and death, we would have had no right, actually, to assume that that was for us. And we could push this thought experiment further with some Old Testament events. You know, where do you place yourselves in the story when you read about the escape from Egypt through the Red Sea? I always place myself, well, of course, one of those joyfully walking through on dry land, right? But actually, if naturally we're Gentiles, where are we? We're either getting drowned in the sea, or we're back in Egypt, enemies of God, mourning the loss of our firstborn sons. You know, we read of God's promise to bring the Israelites into that land of land flowing with milk and honey. And we easily forget that in those promises, we are most naturally represented by the evil nations who live in that land who are going to be driven out. And we read of David and Goliath. And we cheer, don't we, as the plucky Israelite brings down this arrogant giant. Whereas actually, well, we'd have been amongst the terrified Philistines as they fled. It's a real mistake, actually, to feel so entitled to the blessings of God's kingdom, think that they were always going to be ours, to assume that the invite to the party was a given. Because actually, if the plan of God wasn't so remarkably big, if the gates hadn't been flung so far wide open, we'd be stuck on the outside, we'd still be enslaved to sin, we'd be cut off from the promises, we'd be with no hope and without God in the world. I reckon the people who most enjoy the concert tonight will be those who never thought they'd be there. You know, the usual suspects who get invited to everything. It's just another event, perhaps even a chore for some of them to have to be there and sit through it. But those who never thought they'd be there, well, you'll savour every moment. Well, will we rightly humble ourselves and rediscover the sheer thrill of having been invited into Jesus' kingdom? And will we be like that woman from last week who had no sense of entitlement? She knew she wasn't worthy, and yet she depended on and delighted in Jesus and his merciful inclusion of her. I thought we could finish just by praying together a slightly adapted version of the prayer of humble access that we prayed last week, that we sometimes include in the Lord's Supper. I've adapted it slightly because we're not about to share the Lord's Supper, but it's going to come up on screen. There we go, it's up on screen. If you would like to, I invite you to join in with this prayer as a way of expressing this humble dependence on the God who's had mercy on us. So let me lead us. We do not presume to come to this your kingdom, O merciful Lord, trusting in our own righteousness, but in your abundant and great mercies. We are not worthy so much as to gather up the crumbs under your table, but you are the same Lord
who delights in showing mercy. We praise you that our sinful bodies have been made clean by Christ's body, and our souls washed through his most precious blood, and that we may evermore dwell in him and he in us in your perfect kingdom. Amen.